I'd like to call the Legacy Committee meeting to order. Quite a few of our members are going to be in and out today because there's a lot of activity throughout the building. Other people have bills up. Representative Torgelson just said he had a bill up on Highway 14 downstairs, and the chair of this committee is away, so you're stuck with me for the day. And so former Chair Erdahl, I expect you to be on good behavior and not cause too much chaos, I'm hoping. Representative Erdahl.
I move $500,000 in the bonding bill, or the legacy bill, for the Litchfield Opera House. I'll open the table. 3-2, I think we...
Apparently we have a sound problem here with some white noise. So today I'm kind of excited. We have the folks from the Purpich Center. A quick story. I've told this to Mr. Representative Freeburg before, but in the 1980s, when I was in college, Representative McDonald's kind of young, so he probably doesn't remember those years, but I went to Golden Valley Lutheran College, which was on your campus, or is your campus now, or however you say that properly. And it was a good time in my life in Golden Valley and represented Freeburg's district, but I don't know if you still have a pond in the middle that I had a Greek class at 7 a.m., which I wasn't very good at Greek, biblical Greek, so I looked out the window and looked at the goose pond. And but I'm looking forward to hearing your presentation from the Purpich Center. So I believe we have Dr. Paulson.
Yes.
And if you'd like to go ahead, please state your name for the record and go ahead when you're ready.
Mr. Chair, members, I'm Pam Paulson, and I serve as the Senior Director of Policy at the Purpich Center for Arts Education. And I've also been the one leading this project for the Purpich Center that has been funded by the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. And we thank you for the opportunity of letting us come before you and tell our story. We've worked in two regions of the state so far, and we would like to work in more regions if we can find a way to grow this program to every region of the state. The Purpich Center for Arts Education is the state agency for arts education. And it was created by you, the legislature, in 1985. I began working for the center just around that same time and felt very, very honored to be able to spend the last 26 years of my career working to help build the center, which consists of three main parts, which I think most of you already know about, but in case you don't, the first one is the Arts High School. The Arts High School is for 11th and 12th grade students. It's residential, and it's located, as Chair Lilly pointed out, in Golden Valley, Minnesota. The second part of the agency is the library, and again, it's a state library, so we're lucky because we're part of the state system. We can do interchanges. We've got over 15,000 items in the collection, and it's not only available to our students and teachers, but it's available to anybody in the state of Minnesota 18 years and older, and you can go online and figure out what you'd like, and we mail it to you. The third part of the agency is professional development and research, which is our outreach component of the agency, where we work with students and teachers around the state to help improve education. And again, when the legislature was establishing the legacy funds, they had foresight to include a category specifically for arts education. So as the state agency for arts education, we were asked by a subcommittee of senators from the Education Committee in 2009, when Senator Stump was chairing that committee, to develop a program on arts integration. And that first time around, we received $1 million from the legacy funds to start the program that they had talked with us about in arts integration. And we also designed a statewide study on the status of arts education. In 2011, the second biennium, we received $1.7 million to continue working in the first region, which was Lakes Country region in the west central part of the state, and we started working also in southeast Minnesota, and you will see a map here that sort of shows the two regions that we're currently working in, the Lakes Country and the Southeast, and in each of those regions, we are able to work with the ECSU to help with coordination and identifying schools that might be interested. Well, sometimes it's hard for people to imagine what arts integration is. What does that look like when you are combining different subject areas together and you're doing different standards together? And so we have made some videos. We don't have all of them with us today. I'll give you a little picture of what they might look like, and then we'll show you one. The first thing I wanted to tell you, though, is there are dozens of very, very interesting examples of arts-integrated innovative lessons being done by these teacher teams that were in all of these different schools. But to give you just a couple of examples, in one of our schools, the teachers did a history whole unit on teaching the Civil War through theater. In another place, we had teachers at the high school level teaching AP psychology through theater and getting those students ready to take the advanced placement psychology test. In another school, it was an elementary school, the teacher invited an author in, and those elementary kids worked on creative writing around stories of an elder in their community that they thought was so special, and they were learning the fundamentals of writing. And although we don't have a video of this, in January, teachers at Sibley Elementary School in Albert Lea got to work with Native American Darlene St. Clair, and she helped them begin to plan arts-integrated lessons about Dakota culture, history, and contributions of American Indians to meet the standard that's required in our Minnesota academic standards. So now we'll show you one three-minute video that's called Getting the Picture. And it's about students in one of our schools.
There are a lot of students that don't ever go outside, and they are missing lots of really cool things. I felt like if we could get them out in nature, not just, you know, outside my classroom, not, you know, around the school building, but really be in it, they would understand ecosystems. They would understand how nature has to work together.
Tammy and Shauna are both teachers at New York Mills High School. Tammy is a visual arts teacher. Shauna is a science teacher, and I have been working with Shauna and Tammy to support them as they develop their unit combining science and the visual arts.
Our big plan is to have them take a picture of an ecosystem, and then they have to actually zoom in and take a picture of something that would be one part of that ecosystem. And then they'll do another part of it, and then they have to explain how it interacts. Kids can describe things, but do they understand it, and can they put it together?
Right.
Manipulate it, you know? Do they really get it? Can they apply it?
Deb Knutson came as a visiting artist, and Deb talked about all the different kinds of photography that was out there and all the different things that we talked about in our standards.
This has probably been the best science class I've ever taken because of this project. Doing these projects is really fun because you just gain so much knowledge because you're actually doing it.
I think the students took the ecosystems and the science standards and then tied the art in right with it, so they were very equal part. They had started to look at things in nature more as artists also, besides what were requirements of our project.
I'm kind of excited. I have quite a few more actually exceeding than I thought. To me, it's important because it means that they understand the standards that we're trying to implement.
This picture is a landscape photograph taken at Maplewood State Park. The focus of this picture is a deciduous forest in the background. This picture has a unique angle of perspective as it was taken from the base of a widowmaker looking up along the trunk. This fallen tree is not only a source of food for decomposers such as insects and fungi, but it will add new nutrients to the soil, promoting new growth.
Including the art with it, I think it helped them get the picture, I guess. I don't know if you want to say that. I think they understood it more. art and science really go good together.
Well, you got to see some students. You got to see parks and trails and water and the environment, sort of supporting the same ideas that the Legacy funds in the first place. And it included even a few Minnesota accents, I heard, in the teachers and in the students. So,
Dr. Paulson?
Yes.
I'm going to stop you just for a second. We have a question from Representative McDonald.
Sure.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Dr. Paulson, I appreciate your slideshow as a professional photographer. I think the only professional photographer in the State House. It was a pleasure to see wonderful art and then mix it with science. So my question is, in addition to the students learning the science and ecology and photography, are they then also learning the post-production work associated with capturing the images in the end? So they have yet another skill, a skill set that they can take going forward.
Representative McDonald, I'm sorry, Representative McDonald, thank you for that really good question, because one of the things that we care about is these kids getting deeper and deeper experiences. This one was only a few weeks long, and what we're trying to do is make these longer experiences so they can do post-production, they can get the technology, and learn more about the arts. Because one of the things that we always worry about is when you do arts integration, the arts become subservient to whatever the other subject is. So we haven't done enough of that. We would like to do more of it, and we keep trying to find authentic ways to make sure that the students are doing the arts as deeply as they are any other subject that we're combining with.
Representative McDonald?
Thank you. Since there may be is time, well, I appreciate that answer, and I think that's a great program to have. I'm a big fan of the arts, especially photography, because you actually can make a career of it, as opposed to maybe drawing and painting and sculpting. Nothing wrong with those. But do you work with local schools then, some of the trade schools, the community schools, Hennepin Technical Centers, some of those colleges that offer the photography classes that they too, the instructors and students can come in and help with this project and or going forward expand it in that field with the arts in integration?
Dr. Paulson.
Thank you. Representative McDonald. We do, and especially MCTC, since it's fairly close to us, and they have an excellent photography program there. The reason I know that, in part, is because we have professional relationships with them, but I have a son in that program. And actually, he's learning disabled. He's my son, and he went to the arts high school. Not really, of course, he's a teenager. Now he's in his 20s, but not really having a strong background in writing or reading. The way he expresses himself is through visual images. And I tell you, the program that they have and the connections that we've been able to make with our students from the Arts High School to MCTC are strong, and the program is excellent. So yes, and being a mom of somebody who didn't know much about photography, I thought our program was so exceptional. I said to myself, I wonder what he can learn beyond this when he goes to the community college. And then I learned there's so much more to learn, and it's so much more in depth. So I see the progression myself, and I know where we're trying to get. And I wouldn't say we've gotten there yet, but we certainly believe that this is a powerful way to learn, and we want to do that. Okay.
Thank you, Dr. Paulson. Please continue.
Thank you. We have so far had about 4,000 students in this program in the Lakes Country region and the Southeast, and about 200 teachers. Fortunately, we've also had an evaluator that could work with us these first 2 years, and we have a different evaluator working with us now. And from her report, she has given us some insights into what's going on with the students and the teachers. She surveyed the students and found that 94% of the students said they put effort into this arts integrated course. And any of you who have taught know that 94% of having students putting effort into a class is a striking statistic. 83% kept on working even when they got stuck and they were dealing with new technology that they didn't know about or subjects that were difficult, which speaks a lot to the idea of persistence. And finally, 80% of the students were motivated to try new things, and we know that employers are telling us they want employees who are willing to try new things, do things creatively, and do and work toward innovation. So this was a good thing for students. In terms of their student academic performance, which she studied both engagement and academic performance, 83% of the students exceeded proficiency or met proficiency as determined by their teachers' evaluation. And then we also try to work hard with the teachers because they can have an influence with these students long after they've left their classroom. 96% of the teachers said that they drastically improved their ability to write arts and graded curriculum, and 83% wrote better assessments. And that's what I think is so critical here. They're not only learning how to write the curriculum, but they're telling us that they've improved their ability to understand what the students are actually learning and doing these aligned assessments. Just two quick quotes from teachers. One of the teachers said, "I sometimes forget to make sure my lessons are connecting with the standards. I now pay more attention to that, which has only improved my students' learning." And a second teacher says, "Creating an artistic expression requires a high-level intellectual and emotional rigor. Our students reach much higher levels of learning through this project." And now just to switch gears for a minute, because this was the other part of the project besides the arts integration, this is a study that we started in 2010 to study the status of arts education in Minnesota. The name of the study is Building a Legacy, Arts Education for All Minnesota Students. And if you didn't receive a copy previously, there are these extra copies up here that you should feel very welcome to take with you. So from this study, which we surveyed all of the schools in Minnesota, we learned about which schools are struggling to integrate arts integration or arts education into their schools, and it gave us a picture of where the Purpose Center needs to spend more time and energy. We also learned about where schools are doing a fabulous job with arts education, and now we want to work with them to figure out what they're doing and how we can look at those schools as models. We are the only state that has so far created a section of the study on arts integration. We're the first ones to do that. And we found out that two-thirds of the schools want to increase or introduce arts integration into their schools. That was an astounding thing to find out. So if there are two-thirds of the schools who want more help in arts integration, we know there's a lot of work to do in this area, and we look forward to trying to increase these opportunities for students with your help. So here's our request of you this session. If you look in your folder, you'll see a page that looks like this slide, and it tells you our goals are to increase both student and teacher learning. Our measures will be the ones that we'll hold ourselves accountable with, will be clearly measured by our evaluator and our own reflection. And then we'll create some strategies for how to make sure we meet these goals, one of which is technology, because all of the schools that we're working with are in rural Minnesota. And therefore, that's a lot of travel. So we'd like to reduce that travel. So the request really is four things. The first one is to continue the two regional networks in Lakes Country and Southeast so that we can help them gain greater independence in their work in curriculum and instruction and assessment through arts integration, and that should lead to sustainability. And we also want to increase the online work so that the teachers can continue to help their students be successful. The second thing we'd like to do is add a new region. We don't know where that might be, but someplace in the state where we can reach a whole nother group of teachers and kids. Third, we'd like to develop high school courses. If we were struggling with how will we make this sustainable, what will we do that when we walk away from these schools, we know that this work will be sustainable? And we thought in the high school, that's getting a course in the course catalog. That's getting a course in the registration guide. So let's help them develop really good courses that would be ready by the 15-16 school year to assure this work is available and sustainable. And then the fourth thing that we would like to ask for your support with is to redo this study for 5 years out so that we can build on this baseline data and see what trends we're seeing in arts education, because this data is not collected anyplace else. So the total request for this biennium is $2,324,000. I've provided you with a lot of numbers and statistics and data because I know that in your jobs as legislators, you need that information to make sound decisions. But really, I feel like the bottom line is that a great education, which includes the arts, is priceless. And we would like to have you know through our experience and the evaluators' work that this arts integration program is working. It is engaging students and teachers in meaningful work that is worth doing, and they are achieving the academic standards. And this is at a time when many students are falling behind. Our graduation rates and our attendance rates need bolstering, and this is one way we can help do that. Our state cannot afford to waste any talent, students or teachers, talents, and so we thank you for the investment that you've made in this project so far. We found it to be highly effective, and we know that students need a top-notch education to go on and be effective citizens, employees, and leaders. So if you're interested in going deeper into this, there's a website. This is a temporary website because the one that we are building with the legacy funds is a Drupal site that will be launched in August when our new crop of, hopefully our new crop of teachers come on board. So I am happy to try to answer some questions if anybody has any.
Thank you, Dr. Paulson, and it's great to see your enthusiasm for the arts and arts development in our state. And I think I saw an arm go up over here. Representative Ward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. thank you, Dr. Paulson. We've talked in the past, and you've had some of my students from my district, and you've done remarkable things for all students in the state of Minnesota, so I just want to compliment you on that. What when you say the integration network includes Southeast and Lake Country regions, mm-hmm. define for me, I know that, what are the Lake Country regions? I know where Southeast is.
Mm-hmm.
But where are the Lake Country regions?
Dr. Paulson.
Chair Levy, thank you. Representative Ward, we actually have gone by those EXU regions, so it's all of the counties that are in that Lakes Country EXU.
Oh.
And that's the same thing in the Southeast as well. In the Lakes Country region, we actually used the EXU as the fiscal agent to run all of the funds through them. In the Southeast region, we decided to send the funds directly to the schools, so we haven't been running them through the EXU, but that's the those how we determine those regions.
Representative Ward.
So, thank you, Mr. Chair. So, can you give me, I taught special ed for many years, so I'm, a little bit slower on a lot of things here. So, can you give me, define for me the Lakes Country. Give me some towns in that Lakes Country, some counties or...
Absolutely, and you should find some of this information in your folder as well. We are working with Perham, we are working with Morris, we're working with, Holly, Lake Park Audubon, we're working with Rothsay, Osakis, New York Mills, and we'd like to do this for another year with them and bring on some more and additional schools. We've had some interest and we haven't been able to accommodate them yet, so that's that region.
Thank you very much.
Any other questions from members? Seeing none. Representative Freeberg.
I just wanted to say thanks for coming. Chair Lilly, you said the Purpose Center is in my district. Technically, it's across the street from my district, in Ryan Winkler's district. But it's a great program. I mean, I was on the City Council in Golden Valley, and it was in. I ran at large there, so I got to know it pretty very well through there, and hope you're able to continue doing all the great work that you've been doing, Paulson.
Chair Lilly and members, just thank you so very much for hearing our testimony this morning, and thank you so much for the support you've given us up to this point.
Representative McDonald.
Yeah, thank you, Doctor. Perhaps it's in the pamphlet that you sent us, but some of the results of past students and their accomplishments and where they went off to either work or the military or college, and some of the accomplishments that you guys can boast. Do we have that data in front of us?
Dr. Paulson.
Chair Lilly, Representative McDonald, are you talking about the Arts High School graduates or students that have come through the Arts Integration Program?
Representative McDonald.
Mr. Chairman, the Arts Integration.
Chair Lilly. Representative McDonald, actually, we don't have post-graduation information on these students. The program is only in its third year, and so, for example, the Southeast has only been involved for 1 year, in the Lakes Country region, it's 2 years, and we haven't yet gotten to the point where we're collecting post high school graduation data. We have that kind of information on our arts high school students, and we are in, I think, graduating our maybe 23rd class of the arts high school. So we have been collecting data about where those students go and doing some alumni surveys after they've gone.
Representative McDonald.
Mr. Chairman, not knowing, I did ask the wrong question. Yes, the latter that you spoke of, that is the numbers that I'm curious about. If you keep track of their careers and where they go off to.
Yeah. Yeah.
Dr. Paulson, go ahead. Yes. You're doing fine. We're going to be pretty casual.
Representative McDonald, I know that Deborah Kelly, who's sitting next to me, her office does the alumni work, and so she may have a better answer to this than I did, but at one point I did work in that area. It was out of my office, and I know that we did surveys at the 5-year point and the 10-year point after students had graduated, and we collected data about where they were and what they were doing. And I should tell you, as one of the founders of the center, we projected 26 years ago that only probably about 40% of our students might actually end up in careers, actual careers, where they're earning money and their livelihood in the arts, and maybe 60% would not. But we also projected that almost 100% would keep the arts alive in their lives somehow, and that is in fact pretty much what we're finding out as we're talking with students, our graduates, that many of them have gone into, they've gone to MIT, they've become engineers, doctors, lawyers, physicians, but almost all of them have continued to talk about the importance of the arts in their lives and continue to practice in some way. So it's been very, very interesting to see. When we developed the school in the first place, we said it needs to be a comprehensive curriculum because you don't know where the lives of these young people will head. And so we need to make sure that they've got academics that are strong as well as the arts.
Thank you. Is that Representative McDonald?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, thank you. That would be very helpful for me if you could provide that data, your graduation rates and how they, you know, as you follow them through their careers and their test scores and so on and so forth, to see the improvement that I'm sure that they are getting with going through the program. So if there's if you have that data, I would find it helpful for myself and hopefully assume that the rest of the members would as well.
Go ahead. Please state your name for the record and just.
I'm Deborah Kelly. I'm Director of Communications at Purbridge Center for Arts Education. I don't have a lot of those statistics with me today, but I do have a couple of statistics, and one is that we strive for 100% graduation rate, and as of July last year, we did have that, and we have it nearly every year. And I know that each year 85 to 90% of our students go on into a higher educational learning. But we do have other statistics, which I can go back and I'll make sure that we send that information to. Thank you.
Good. Well, thank you very much for coming today, and thank you for your work. I think you should warn parents, though, as you raise artists. We have a young artist in our family that's gone off to Berklee College of Music, and I think you should warn parents how expensive that might be before they get their kids involved in arts at young ages. So just a suggestion.
Noted. Well noted.
Mr. Chair,
go ahead.
May I add one comment?
Yes.
I have one more statistic, and that is last year our students received $3.5 million in scholarships for higher ed.
Well, thank you very much. Representative Ward, have you had an opportunity to take a peek at the minutes? And if so, would you?
Sure, I have, and I will move them.
Any questions? Thank you for moving those. All those in favor of the minutes, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
Aye. I haven't read them yet.
Okay. Sure minutes pass and are approved. I'd like to invite the folks from the Children's Museum to come forward. Just want to note that we had the mayor of Golden Valley was here for the presentation for the Purpich Center, so we're expecting the mayor of St. Paul to be here. So, Ms. Griesen, please go ahead when you're ready and tell us about your work.
Good. Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. I'm Diane Griesen,
president of Minnesota Children's Museum, and really appreciate the opportunity this afternoon to tell you about the exciting things we have that's only been made possible because of previous appropriations from the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and the plans that we would have to continue that work with another appropriation. Minnesota Children's Museum has received two prior appropriations. In 2009, the museum received $500,000, and with that appropriation, developed an exhibit that is now touring throughout Minnesota, and that exhibit's title name is Storyland. This is an exhibit that literally children step into three storybooks, Tale of Peter Rabbit, Snowy Day, and Where's Spot for the younger crowd. And they, through their imagination and their just their own direction of how to use the props and the experiences that are provided, they create the experience for themselves. But underneath it all is there's six pre-emergent literacy skills and activities that encourage the development of those skills, such as puppet play that encourages the use of a vocabulary to expand a child's vocabulary, or activities that have rhyming associated with it, so children start to hear those rhythms and words. And these are skills that are known to lead to becoming master readers with that. There's also messaging in the exhibit that helps parents understand what are those pre-emergent literacy skills and how might they play with their children outside of the exhibit experience to extend that kind of learning. This exhibit is about 500 square feet in size, and it tours around the state, goes into community centers or libraries, and is typically a free experience for those communities with that. And we've just gotten very positive response from that. It's toured as far south as Worthington, as far north as Chisholm, east to Duluth, west right now it is in the White Earth Reservation, Detroit Lakes area with that. With the second appropriation 2 years ago, the Children's Museum received a $1 million appropriation, and with that we continued the Storyland tour but added a couple other projects to that plate. Building on the positive receptivity that we had to the Storyland exhibit, which stays, what Storyland does is it tours around the state, but it stays in a community for about 3.5 months, and then it moves on to the next location. With the project that we have branded Smart Play Spots, what this is it's a permanent installation, typically in libraries, but has also been put into community centers, where it's a literacy-based learning experience. Doesn't have kind of the licensed names because of the challenge of maintaining licenses, because this is a permanent installation that becomes an asset of that community organization. But we have, thanks to legacy funding, we will have about 12 of these locations that will be introduced in, throughout the state, and I'll have a map later that shows some different locations associated with that. But again, it's all it's based on the same six pre-emergent literacy skills. It's kind of the underlying and the messaging for the adults to understand it, and it really is a very nice kind of hand in glove combination, particularly with libraries. And the third project that we did was the start of a children's museum in Rochester, the third largest city in Minnesota. Did not have a children's museum, while Minnesota Children's Museum, located in downtown St. Paul, certainly had visitors and members that come from every corner of the state, including the area of the Rochester area in southeast Minnesota. Obviously, the distance reduces the frequency with which a child and family can experience it. So thanks to Arts and Cultural Heritage funding, we have a small museum there in a storefront space there. It looks very modest and unassuming from the outside, but you step through the doors and it feels like Minnesota Children's Museum. It has a very similar experience. I think it plays bigger than it looks.
from the outside, and we've just had tremendous response from the community. The attendance has beyond what we've been what we had projected associated with that, and as of April, we'll hit our 1 year anniversary, and we're thinking that'll be about 32,000 visitors in that first year. So that's what we've done in the past. And I'm sorry, I had one more. So I wanted to just put this map up there to show. And really, this is only made possible because of arts and cultural heritage funding. These dots on the map represent the locations. Before arts and cultural heritage funding, there really would have been only one dot on the map, and that would have been the location of the museum in downtown St. Paul. But now there's a second colored orange dot, and this is also in the back of the brochure that was included in your materials. So there's a second orange dot now in Rochester to represent museums. There are green dots all over the state. Some of those were funded by other projects besides legacy funding, but the vast majority of them were made possible by legacy funding. And then we asked communities to step up and provide some matching funds. So it really was a great public-private partnership that helped to extend and leverage the legacy funding sites into many more locations from that. And then the pink dots are the spaces where Storyland has toured to or where it will soon go to. So in this budgeting year, we are asking for $1 million to start a new set of projects with that while those projects continue to exist, those other projects continue to exist in the community. The first project we call Creativity Commons, and funding would really help us to launch this. It is an experience that would be at Minnesota Children's Museum. And it really allows children and families to explore creative expression and to have their own inventions. There would be kind of unique, frequently changing materials that would be provided, authentic tools that would be used, whether that be, you know, screwdrivers or, you know, paintbrushes, you know, kind of everything from, you know, art to construction provided there. But the real opportunity for visual arts, performances, demonstrations, an opportunity to bring in Minnesota artists with that. We also want to use social media to before and during the experience to co-create in that way, to have the public tell us what, you know, what should be created in this experience, what types of things should be provided with that. And we would see this as this exhibition would be open for about 4 months is what our schedule is, but with the co-creation period in the social media before that. A second project is to build another traveling exhibit that would go around the state, building on the strong response that we have for the Storyland tour. We do have more communities applying to be on that tour than you know, time that it takes and slots that are available to go to that. So building on that, we want to create a complimentary exhibit that highlights Minnesota's very unique landscape. Minnesota is one of the few states where three biomes come together. You've got the coniferous forests of the north, you've got the deciduous forests of the east, you've got the grasslands that extend to our west. All that comes together in Minnesota. We want to create an exhibit that highlights that. And then to complement the literacy-based focus of the Storyland exhibit, work into that underlying it, fostering mathematical understanding and problem-solving would be kind of the educational base that would underline that. And the third project is with Minnesota Children's Museum of Rochester to create an access program that would provide free memberships to low-income families. It would provide financial aid to schools and community organizations. There'd be special events for organizations that serve families in need, and then the opportunity to create programming that would enrich the learning experience for those groups that come with it. So again, I want to thank the committee for the prior appropriations that the Children's Museum has done. As I said, this work would only have made possible through that, you know, particular funding and the purpose of that being arts education, and arts access. Thank you.
Thank you very, very much. Any questions? Thank you for your presentation, and enjoy your work. And it's good that you're spreading it around the state. And if there's any other information you'd like to send us, please do so. Send it to staff, and then we'll send it out to our members. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
I'd like to welcome up folks from the regional libraries. Mr. Ranum, please.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Introduce
Mr.
yourself,
Chair.
And just go ahead when you're ready.
Members of the committee, my name is Mark Ranum. I'm the regional library director for the Plum Creek and Pioneerland Library Systems in southwest and west central Minnesota, and the Minnesota Library Association legislative chair for 2013. I'm here to present some information about what we have done with legacy funds in the past, and also to answer any questions that you might have. I'm very happy that we were able to follow two terrific legacy fund recipients. The Purpose Center, with its connection to the Arts Library. That Arts Library is connected to all the other academic public libraries in the state through the MinLink Gateway, and certainly we borrow from and share with the Purpose Center Library and their students all the time around the state. I'm also happy to follow the Children's Museum. We've had great partnerships with the Children's Museum. Their smart play spots are genius. We have one in Wilmer at the Wilmer Public Library, and they are magnets for kids and for parents in terms of the early literacy skills. The pre-emergence literacy skills, by the way, is something Minnesota can be proud of. The Public Library Association paid for the research on those skills through the Center for Early Education and Development at the University of Minnesota. Dr. Scott McConnell led that project, and Minnesota libraries were one of the first sets of public libraries that actually implemented those six early literacy skills, and we build those into every story time, every program, every activity for children. So today I'm here to talk a little bit about the 2012 results. You should have a handout in your packet that details out some of the results. There's a folder that with the back that shows you the map of the 12 regional public library systems. The regional public library systems are how the 360 public libraries in the state are all connected, and state funding for libraries rolls through those regional library systems and down onto the front lines. And then there's a one-page handout that talks about what happened in 2012, the 2,100 programs touching 165,000 Minnesotans across all 87 Minnesota counties and over 350 cities. The regional public library infrastructure is the strongest in the state in terms of delivering programming. We have staff, buildings, resources for communities to deliver those programs, even into the smallest communities. As you are well aware in your districts, quite often the local public library is the arts, culture, and history center of a community and continues to play that role. Legacy funds allow us to play that role in even a stronger way by developing partnerships. And you see the 1,153 partnerships that were documented in fiscal year 2012. These are partnerships with not only the larger organization, the Minnesota Historical Society, the State Arts Board, the Children's Museum, but also partnerships down to the very, very small local level, including book clubs and small arts community organizations that really rely on libraries and the library legacy funding in order to promote and enhance their activities as well. The programs range the gamut from all types of arts and culture and historical programming, including, obviously, literary arts. We do have a significant number of Minnesota Book Award winner tours and book clubs in a bag and those types of things to really promote the Minnesota author and literacy activities that are happening in the state. I'd like to just talk about two programs in particular. One happened in my region. The city of Walnut Grove, which is the historical site for Laura Ingalls Wilder, does not have a public library. Walnut Grove is a community that just never had a public library. It was a bookmobile stop and now has an outreach collection stop at both the Senior Care Center as well as the Community Center. But they do have a pageant every year celebrating Laura Ingalls Wilder tradition. And last year, the Plum Creek and Pioneerland Library System had 30 buses with 1,500 people from taking up to a 2-hour and 40-minute drive to the pageant and back home, sometimes getting home at 1:30 or 2 in the morning, of intergenerational groups, families, community groups, and going to that pageant. 97% of those folks, when they filled out their evaluation, said that the reason they were able to attend was that the bus provided transportation access and they had a free ticket to the show. And I think we often forget that for folks from Ortonville, Minnesota, to go to the Walnut Grove pageant, it's not only the expense of, you know, the ticket and the gas, it's also just the expense of actually arranging that trip. And for the libraries to arrange those trips and have those buses not only fill up but have waiting lists, I think was a tremendous activity. We have a lot of documentation from kids who, before the activity, met with parents or school groups or youth book clubs, reading the books, getting to know the story, getting to know what happened, but also then the tales of those programs where they go back and they draw pictures of what life was like on the prairie in their art classes, or they come into the library for follow-up discussions. So these programs don't just happen as one event, they happen as a continuum. The other story is one that was related to me by Prudence Johnson, who, as you know, is one of Minnesota's finest singers of historical songs, and she sung she's nationally known, and she and Dan Trenard did a number of programs out in to the communities singing songs related to Minnesota's greatest generation. This was a program arranged by the Minnesota Historical Society Partnership. And at one event in Houston, Minnesota, a couple had brought their grandmother in a wheelchair from the nursing home to listen to these songs. She used to be a radio singer, and she had not been well. She had several strokes, but they wanted to bring her to this performance knowing that, you know, she would enjoy it. Not only did she enjoy it, but Prudence came up to her afterwards and started talking to her a little bit. In her quiet voice, she was telling Prudence about some of the songs that she had sung, and Prudence said, "Oh, I know that one," and started singing the song to her, and the woman started to sing. For the first time that the grandchildren could remember, their grandmother started to sing. And it was that kind of experience that you look at and you think, there's the legacy. That's the story that those people will tell their grandchildren about their own grandmother. And from my point of view, the local libraries provide that kind of story every day. We don't always hear about them, but that's the kind of story we provide every day. So we would hope that you'd look favorably upon our request for additional funding over the next biennium for libraries to partner with other organizations and continue to provide these programs. I'm happy to take any questions you might have.
Thank you, Mr. Ranum. Any questions for the presenter? Thank you very much. I just want to take this. I didn't warn Representative Murphy about this, but, in the very beginning of the formation of this effort, and she was clearly a leader for some of you newer members, that she really pushed to get the money into the libraries of the state of Minnesota, and hats off to her for having the vision and the foresight to do that. I don't know if she'd like to comment, but if you have an opportunity to go into many of your local libraries, I think you'd be surprised how just different things that they've been able to do with this money. And I've had the opportunity, and it's, it's reflected in ours with a piece of artwork that hangs, I know, in the Maplewood Library, and up in this, a big sculpture of art. But, it's just different expressions, and, each library, I think, is system is chosen to reflect it in different ways or to use the money. But I don't know if Representative Murphy, since we have a couple seconds, if they'd, you can go ahead if you'd like, if she'd like to take a brief second and educate all of us and maybe some of our newer members too, what her vision was. And I believe that Representative Erdahl carried that forth in his chairmanship and saw the wisdom of that too. So thank you for his leadership. But Representative Murphy, would you be willing to do that?
Well, I'm not prepared, but I
I've been heartwarmed because of the notes that I've received from across the state, from people that have attended something, and somehow or another they heard that they could send me a note. And there was a woman up in northwestern Minnesota that wrote that she had just gotten home. It was written at 1:10 a.m. because she had just gotten home from meeting an author that she had loved for years and never dreamed that she would be able to meet, but that author spoke at the library on a particular date and was brought in by the money that the regional library had received for that, just that kind of an experience. The last experience I had was with Storybook, the Children's Museum at outside on this cold fall day. It was freezing on a Saturday morning, but I wanted to look nice, so I didn't have a coat, and I looked nice, but it was outside at the library in Duluth, and there were 60 little kids there with their parents, and some hay bales were around, and it was at the foot of the what had been, in former years, very drab, cement-looking nothing. If you notice, the Duluth Library is built kind of like a ship or an oar boat, and it was just the drab cement. But in the last couple of years, through the legacy funding, an artist from my district, who has the same last name, Scott Murphy, had been hired to draw like books in the bookcase from top to bottom, and so it's bright and colorful. It just changes the whole look of this area where kids can dance on a little cement stage, and someone can come and talk, or sometimes I see skateboarders on the stage also. But on this particular day, it was just the ceremony to invite people in then to go through the storybook, and the mayor read a story, and I read a story, and the kids visited the Peter Rabbit exhibit, and they loved it. They ate carrots, because Peter Rabbit, and that was a snack for the kids that day, were little vegetables cut up, and nothing extensive, but there were little art project thing stations that they could be at, and several activities, probably all total, each kid probably would spend an hour to 2 hours at the event. And it was an event, and they were excited. But I've also been at occasions that were funded through the legacy money, through the libraries, where different kinds of things were projected to people. And there was I think the greatest experience is that new people were coming in, and they weren't the regular user people. We danced, you know, the bluebird, in and out, kind of the person that comes to do the dances with the kids and the parents, and tells little stories and sings little songs with the early childhood kids. An unusual, something that's different than what the library can provide for itself all the time. Another thing I received lots of notes at is that several libraries, and I think it started down here, was that they had, the library was the place where the tickets were available to other cultural events in the region. Like in our area, they had tickets available at certain times of the year and certain days of the week to go to the aquarium or to go to the train museum or to do other things in partnership with the libraries. And you had to go to the library, and that's where they were available. But while you might be picking up the ticket, then the library had their usual programming going on also. And so people came to that. And so there's been many new users. And during this day and age where people say, oh, you know, technology is where it's at. Well, the library has technology, too. And that's the growing thing for their operating budgets is to try to meet the needs of the people that have to come there for training and so forth. And so that's expensive to teach people how to use the computer and to have computers available so they can fill out their unemployment reports and all that kind of stuff. So it seemed to me, getting back to the vision, that this was a community place already, but with less budgets, operating budgets, coming from the taxpayers, local taxpayers through the property taxes, that this legacy money would be opportunities to be partnerships with different groups and different ages and reach out and connect people in different a variety of ways. And it seems to me they've thought of the variety of ways that if you look at what the regional library systems have done with the funding, I'd say it's a success, and we should definitely continue. Now, for the people that don't know, it was easier because there was a formula. The libraries are funded by the Department of Education, or receive some funding through the Department of Education from the state, and the formula was already established. And so that's why education, libraries are under education, and that's why this money was funded. Because one of the guideposts or one of the principles that we set is that if we could distribute legacy money through already established successful grant programs, we should use them. The money shouldn't be intermingled, but the success has already been. The formula's been already devised. They're used to giving out grants, so let's let them give this new money out too for ways, and then people are accountable back through them and to everyone. But I think there's still ideas being created, partnerships being renewed, other groups in the community that were not quite sure how to get involved with legacy funding. They have some place to turn and local people that can tell them, well, be our partner, do this. And so there's a lot of promise ahead. Thank you for asking.
Well, thank you, Representative Murphy, and thank you others for allowing that dialogue to happen. I can't imagine if she had some time to prepare, she would have. It's been, you know, I was there in the beginning, and I remember her really fighting for this, and she helped educate the 134 members of the House and then the 67 senators and the governor at the time to to see the merits of this, and I really like that it's not absolute. I mean, you don't set like this framework that it's rigid. I like that it is, you know, allows for each area to kind of decide what they want to do, and I think you see a multitude of successes all over the place. So I ask if you get a chance to go into your library and, you know, and see how they're doing it, and not only with libraries, with all the funds, and see what they're doing on parks and trails, what they're doing on clean water, and we all need to go and find out, you know, and then bring that back and be a resource. But she really did that, and hats off to you for it. Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Sherman. Thank you for sharing that with us as well. Well, as a part Scotsman, I'm also kind of frugal, so I'm very careful as to watching the dollars move here about for libraries and arts and cultural. However, with that said, as the mayor of Delano, our local library has just done a wonderful job, and I have to thank this committee as well for allocating some of those funds for the legacy for improving our library in Wright County and the city of Delano. I see the programs they offer. Carol Plocker, our librarian, does a wonderful job, and it's great dollars spent, I believe, for my community and for many communities throughout the state of Minnesota. And what they do for all ages, of all types, of all, you know, nationalities, and across the lines. It's just a wonderful program. So I thank this group for doing that. And I must say, Mr. Sherman, I was hoping that you were going to ask Mary Murphy, although she wasn't prepared to sing, you know, instead. But I guess that wasn't the case.
Representative McDonald, I think she started to break into song there, didn't she? A little bit?
She's...
Well, thank you. Representative Ward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, you know, Representative Murphy has been a champion and a leader in the funding and use of our libraries. And, you know, even the additional, as Representative Murphy, as you so eloquently stated, a number of activities in our community that have been able to be enhanced through the library system, through legacy dollars. It was really apparent to me during the most difficult times of the recession, and in central Minnesota, you know, we still are coming out of a difficult time in the recession. We still have some of the highest unemployment in the state of Minnesota, ongoing on 6 years. But the one facility that was the most commonly used facility in our area with unemployment, as you said, with unemployment issues and job searching issues, and, you know, using some data here and some data there, was our local library. So even during the recession, Representative Murphy had the vision that these libraries were going to be more critical for our citizens in the state of Minnesota and many of our areas. And so, Representative Murphy, you know, you have so wonderfully helped our local citizens not only enhance our arts and heritage and culture, but just life skills in the library use as well. So thank you for that as well. And I wanted to point that out as another aspect of library use, even during the toughest times.
Enough, Representative Lilly.
Representative Murphy, enough?
Enough.
I'm sorry. Well, thank you, all the members, and I know a lot of our members were in and out for other committees today, but thank you for the people from the Purpert Center and the Children's Museum as well. I know we focus on libraries here at the end, but your two institutions are doing good work as well. So with that, our next meeting is going to be February 26th, and we're going to talk about Parks and Trails again. That should be fun. And anyways, with that, we are adjourned.